At this time, it gives me great pleasure to introduce a friend of mine. I've known her for like 24 years, maybe more than that, since DUI school. But yeah, man, and I love her, and she's my friend, and we've done service together for years. And Felina!
Felina, alcoholic.
Hola, Felina.
Sorry.
You're fine. I swear, every time I come up here, I never know what's going to come out of my mouth. And I get butterflies still to this day when I'm speaking. And first of all, I'm going to start off and tell you I have a sobriety date. It's December 3rd, 2003. I have 19 years, 9 months, and 14 days of continuous sobriety, or 7,228 days of continuous sobriety. And that may not impress you, but it impresses the heck out of me, because it was not my plan to come in here and stay sober. That was not my plan at all. And I just came in here to get the cops off my back. I have a sobriety, I told you sobriety date. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and I sponsor women in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a home group. It's the Wednesday night intimate women's meeting at my house at 6:30 p.m. Goes to any lights group. And I attend meetings on a regular basis. And but I'm going to tell you how I got to that. So I have little cheat sheet cards, and I brought my big book. Now, this is a big book, because that's what I need today. Big print, big words, so I can see them, and I have glasses so that I can see them. And when I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous, I had a little big book. And then, actually, I didn't even have that. I got that later, but is he still here? No. A member of Alcoholics Anonymous bought me my first big book when I was new, but I'll get to that. So I was born in 1969 to two alcoholic addicts, and that's not what made me an alcoholic, but my father was a 32-year-old starving artist and lived in Venice Beach, and my mom was a 21-year-old spoiled brat who lived in Brentwood. And one day she met him, and he was the worst thing that her parents would ever think that she would end up with, so she brought him home and said, "Look what I found." You know, I don't know about you, I've done that. You know, it wasn't love at first sight. It was, how can I shock my parents? They got together, and I came along. And so they got married, and then they got divorced 6 months after I was born. So I didn't grow up in a loving home. I didn't have two loving parents. I had two alcoholics andas. And they partied together. They drank together. They did drugs together. My mom even sold to my dad at one time. And my dad used to crash on our floor and our couches at different times of my life just to be in the picture. My mom moved around. I'm an only child. My mom moved around every couple years because, you know, that's what most alcoholics do. They do geographics thinking this place will be different. And so I went to many different schools up and down the coast and out of state. Again, that's not what made me an alcoholic. But I saw things I shouldn't have seen as a kid. I saw the drinking and the drugging and the partying and a bunch of other stuff that was not good for me. At 8 years old, at the time we lived in Santa Barbara, top of La Cumbra Road, and my mom wanted to go to Henry's Beach, and so she drove drunk to Henry's Beach and then couldn't remember how to get home. So I drove from Henry's Beach up a road somehow and pulled over at the nearest place I could find, and it was the House of Ice on the Coomber Road. It was an ice skating rink. So nothing like being in a little 8-year-old in a bathing suit, walking into an ice rink to ask how to get directions home, so that we can make it home. And I saw an escape for me. I looked out there and saw things going on and people having fun, and I thought, I want to do that someday. And so I would escape my home, and all the drinking and the drugging and the cops and the, you know, my parents. Police were called out to my house so many times as a kid. My mom had 72 arrests in 1 year for drunk in public, DUIs, disorderly conduct, walking around half naked, loud music blasting at all hours of the day. And at one point in time, her and my dad were out in the front yard popping caps with hammers, with the stereos blasting at the highest decibel, and this was in Cardiff at the time. And the cops show up, and you know, nothing like being mortified. And they're like, wait, there's a kid in the house? And that was just one of the many times that it was like that. You know, my mom ran into houses with her vehicle. She ran into businesses with her vehicles. And one night, I had to bail both my parents out of jail. It was a birthday for my father, and my mom was so drunk that she was snorting at the cops, singing a pig song, and then snorting like a pig. And then my dad had a great idea to turn the hose on them. So they both ended up in the back of a cop car, and I did what any normal young kid does, called the local bails bondsman that my mom had on retainer and said, they're going to jail, can you get them out? And that's not normal for a kid, but that was normal in my life. And again, those aren't the things that made me an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic because I'm an alcoholic, you know. I like the effect I get from alcohol. And once I have one, my body says more. You know, that's my phenomenon of craving that kicks in. And I knew nothing about that when I got here. Ice skated. I started to train for the Olympics. I was going to go for the gold medal. And at one point in time, this was before you guys might not know, but before the Berlin Wall came down, my mom was calling Russia and trying to get us to defect to a communist country because they paid their athletes to ice skate. So we were on the FBI's most wanted list because she was an American trying to defect to there. And that was just normal for her. And I swore I was never gonna be like her, swore I was never gonna be like that at all. But I learned how to be like that. I didn't know any other way of coping. There were no coping mechanisms in my life on how to grow up and be happy and healthy and functional. I didn't know any of that. And so I escaped on the ice. And then once again, we kept moving. We moved to San Diego three times. And San Francisco, because they all had ice rinks, Santa Barbara. And we went to Oregon and Santa Rosa, and I skated in all those different places. And when I was 12, I tried out for the School of Performing Arts in San Francisco. It was like a dance school, like FAME, and I got in. But I wasn't feeling it so much anymore. The skating wasn't for me, it was more for her. She kept pushing me to do more and more and wanting more and more out of me. And I said, I can't do this anymore. And that was my freshman year in high school. So she said, fine, go live with your dad. And my dad was Peter Pan. He never wanted to grow up. You know, hence the drinking, you know, because alcohol stops our ability to grow. and my dad lived in a converted school bus with no running water and drank all the time. And my mom said, you take her. And he did. He let me live in that school bus and enrolled me in school. And I decided then and there that I didn't want to move again. I wanted to stay in the same school and finish all of high school in one place. So I lived in Solvang, California, went to San Ynez High School, and was not the norm for that school, at least where I was living and how I was living. And but I went in and everybody was awing and ooing over the stranger from out of town who came to San Ynez High School with spiked purple hair, a spike studded collar, one of those shirts that hung off the shoulders because it was back in the 80s, and these high leather boots, and I'm walking through campus, and you know, that's nothing like San Ynez. And they're like, ooh, who are you? Where did you come from? You know? And that's when I had my first drink, alcoholically. I first drank in high school. Before that, I had 5 years old, I was stealing my parents' alcohol and, you know, down to Coors and spun around in one of those chairs and fell flat on my face. Because that's what happens when you drink alcohol, but it was from the spinning in the chair. Anyway, but I drank alcoholically for the first time in high school. And pieces came together later on. Apparently, I was tripping acid at 2 years old because my mom's friends thought it would be cool to see what a two-year-old tripping on acid would look like. And at five, I was smoking pot because my parents did that, and it was normal. I didn't like the effect of pot. It just made me thirsty, and so I didn't do it very often. But when I had that first drink, it was on, and I blacked out at school. My best friend had to sneak me off campus, and I woke up out of a blackout, got out of work, and woke up 2 days later and didn't know what had happened. And swore I was never going to do that again, but you know, the weekend came, and that's what people did, so that's what I did, because I wanted to fit in with everybody else. And it's what I knew, you know? You have a bad life, you drink. You have a good life, you drink. You're depressed, you drink. You're happy, you drink. So I drank. You know, I still drink alcoholically. Normally I have two or three drinks going at one time. I just don't drink alcohol today. I say that because I just came back from Bakersfield today. I went to my friend's house and she goes, I should have known you were an alcoholic by the way you drank in high school. You know, you always had a couple, a soda here, or something else here, something here. And then when you started drinking alcohol, you could drink and drink and drink and drink and not get drunk. And I was like, that's not normal. And she was like, what do you mean? I said, that's alcoholic drinking right there. And she was like, mm-hmm, see? She thought she had corrupted me, but she didn't. And I corrupted myself. So the first blackout, swore I wasn't going to do that again, stopped drinking here and there. Fresh out of high school, I went to a party, actually my senior year, went to a party, decided to drink, and attacked, drunk, a young man who was, I didn't attack him, but I made my move on him, drunk, and 'cause it gave me it made me fearless, you know. I could be brazen after a couple drinks and make my move. And so I made my move and ended up with my first child right out of high school. And he did the right thing. He said, I guess we got to get married. And we got married. And so I stopped drinking while I was pregnant. And I all of a sudden, I'm not attacking him because I'm not drinking, and I begin to think my husband doesn't care about me the way I cared about being married, even though I didn't know how to be married. And I didn't know at the time when I attacked him that he was a 24-year-old virgin and knew nothing about any of that. It was me going after him. And I wasn't drinking, so I wasn't going after him. And it wasn't until I did the inventory in Alcoholics Anonymous that I saw, you know, some of my patterns in there. But I then had another kid, so I didn't drink again. And after two kids and not drinking for a couple years, I kind of woke up and went, how the heck did I get here? So my only decision at that time was leave. So I left. Left him, took the kids, and didn't get divorced right away. That wasn't until 10 years later. Hooked up with another one. After that one, fresh out of high school, I went to high school with him, and we partied and drank together, and he professed his love. Anyway, had kids, not one, not two, but three. So I had five kids, two failed relationships that were both 13 years long, and that second one was abusive and deadly for me. He was a heroin user, he was an abuser, and so I was abused on a regular basis, battered and bruised, and then didn't like where my life ended up. And this was 21 years ago. I had a plan, and it was to jump out the second story window and fly with the angel that I saw out there, because I was drinking so much and doing other stuff, so that I stayed up for 21 days and was hallucinating. And my only thought at that time was, kill yourself. That's how you'll get out of this. Because I knew if I tried to leave, he would find me and hurt me. I didn't know how to leave. I didn't know you could just walk out the door of an abuser and get away from it. So I was going to kill myself. That didn't happen, luckily, or you'd have a different speaker standing up here. A God that I thought had given up on me stepped in my life at that point in time, even though I didn't know it. And the cops came in and arrested him and said that I was going to jail for a charge that I had never had before. I had DUIs, you know, Marcus talked about that. I had three DUIs, a couple minor possessions, some other things in there, but never this charge. And I never finished those DUI classes because I kept getting drunk, you know, and kept drinking. And like Marcus said, we met at DUI class, and that was my third one that I was trying to do for an 18-month time. And still drinking at home and doing those other things. So I'd end up in class, and I'd be eyeballs twitching every other way. Couldn't sit still in my seat, or I was hungover from the night before, you know. And they asked our sob stories of, you know, what was your worst night drinking? And I was like, last night, you know? And they're like, really? Tell us what happened. And I'm like, after hours party at work that turned into going to Los Alamos because the party ended at 10 and I wanted to keep drinking. And then I got down there, closed down the bar. Don't remember much after that except driving home and then going to work at 6 in the morning, and now I have to be at this stupid class and tell you what my worst night drinking was, and I'm still hungover and feel like, you know, bad. And they're like, just don't drink. And at that time, Marcus was sober, and he happened to know that my kids' father, and he was like, hey, if he ever wants to come into Alcoholics Anonymous, here's my card. And I'm like, ha, ha, ha. Laughing at that, you know, he's never going to get sober. And then when I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous 20 years ago, Marcus was here. So there was a friendly face for me. And he's still here. So I'm grateful for that. But back to the cops coming in and arresting him. They told me they were going to site release me from the little substation on Cook. and that I could leave. And the voices in my head from the drugs that I was doing said, the cops are going to follow you, so go to that little Quonset hut and act like you're going to get sober. And so I walked in the door, weighing 86 pounds. Didn't know anything, heard wah, 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 God. Wah, 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 keep coming back. Saw the steps on the wall, and I thought, if I read the steps there, that was doing the steps. Saw this and thought, wow, there's 12 steps in there? How big are those steps? Again, that was my alcoholic thinking. I have a busted thinker that does not think right, and my best thinking won't get me out of this. It has to come from somewhere else, you know. And so I came in here and left after want, 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 God, want, 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 keep coming back. And then I'd go to the bar and tell everybody there I found AA. And they're like, what do you mean? Why do you need to go AA? You're not an alcoholic. I'm like, oh, you're right. And so I didn't stay sober. And then I'd go to the, you know, local hotel because people I knew were staying in the hotel and doing things in that hotel. Told them, they're like, where you been? Oh, I went to AA and that other program. And they're like, why are you here then? And I was like, because you're my friends. And they're like, oh, so you're not and I said, no. You know, and I, again, not knowing. And then I'd come in here doing this every 5 days or whatever it was, and couldn't get a sobriety date. Now, I didn't have a sponsor. I wasn't working any steps. I just came into meetings and heard nothing but that want, 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 God, want, 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 keep coming back. Couldn't figure out why my life wasn't getting any better. And I'm one of those that grows at the speed of pain, and I have to get in enough pain before I'm willing to do the work. I'm very, very tough. Like, okay, I'm very, very stupid and very, very stubborn is what I am. And those things used to, for me, that used to be what kept me going. It wasn't until I came in here and, you know, I read the steps. I had no problem admitting I was powerless over alcohol, but I missed that it's a two-part step, that our lives have become unmanageable. I thought I had not a good life, but I had a roof over my head, I had a job, I had a car, I had my kids. You know, that's what normal people do. I had a marriage, I had kids. Not in that marriage and after the marriage, but I still had, you know, again, my thinking, I got it going on. It's, my life's not unmanageable, but like I said, when I got in here, I weighed 86 pounds and was doing those other things. And one of those things was, because I wanted to die, I asked him, because I thought it would kill me, to stick a needle to my arm with meth and heroin. And he did. And that was the end of everything for me and the beginning of everything for me. That's what brought me into Alcoholics Anonymous, to get change something in my life. You know, all the drinking that I was doing before, I was not going to come out in here and stop. I could stop anytime I wanted to. I just didn't want to until I got here. And when I wanted to, I couldn't stop. No idea, like it wasn't clicking at that time, and it was like, oh, okay, I cannot control and enjoy my drinking. When I'm trying to control it, I can't enjoy it. And I even, you know, lied to myself in between there, oh, I can get a 30, you know, buy a 30 pack and put it in your fridge. If you drink one a day, you're not an alcoholic. I'd buy the 30 pack, open one, and go, well, I can drink all 30 of them and replace the 30 pack and nobody will know the difference. And I don't have to, I'd tell them, oh no, that's the same 30 pack. You know, they have no idea. Who knows? Me? and my God, you know, and oblivious. So, and then it came to me one day in a meeting, you know, you cannot, your life cannot be manageable if you're telling somebody to stick a needle to your arm because you want to die. That is not managing your life very well. And it was like, okay, I could feel that. And I finally asked someone to be my, actually I asked three people to be my sponsor and couldn't quite decide on them and kept, you know, getting drunk and relapsing. And people would say, just pick a date. You know, stop changing your date, just pick a date. And some people even told me, if you drink, don't tell anybody. You know? Now, these are people who are not working a program. I knew nothing about that when I got here. You know, we're sitting out at the table, rolling dice, talking like we're in a bar, saying things we shouldn't be saying. And, you know, oh, if you go out and relapse, just don't tell anybody you relapse. Keep your time. And I was like, wait, you can do that? And they're like, yeah, sure you can. I do it all the time. And I'm like, wait, what? And then I got to see somebody come up and take a 14-year cake. And two nights before that, I knew she was in the bar drinking and smoking pot. And I'm like, I can't do that. And I had a very hard time with the God program. God part of this when I first got here because of the I grew up in a Catholic and was told that everything that I had done in my childhood I was going to go to hell for. So I didn't think I needed to be here, or I wasn't worthy of being here, or wasn't worthy of God loving me for all those reasons. And so when I heard that, I was like, and people said, you know, let the group of drunks, G-O-D, be your God. Now, I just told you how some of the people, the group of drunks that were in here that told me to lie, and the people that were claiming time and weren't sober, and I'm like, okay, the group of drunks can't be my God. A doorknob can't be my God because I'll knock down the door. Chair can't be my God because I'll knock over the chair. I need something else. And when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous and started doing the steps, and my sponsor said, do you believe I have a God? And I said, sure, you do, but I don't. She goes, then use my God. Pray to my God. And I was like, I don't know about that one. She goes, well, do you have people up in heaven? And I was like, yeah, I got that. And she said, okay, talk to them. I was like, okay. So at the time, my father-in-law was up in heaven. His name was Terry. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, there were three Terrys here. My father's name is Richard. My mother's name is Daryl. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, there was a Richard and a Daryl here who both had more than a decade of sobriety. And I thought those to be coincidences in my life, not my God showing off. And so I tried talking to my God, got a sponsor, finally started working the steps, met with her regularly, attended meetings on a regular basis, and got into service. Those are the things I began to hear as I was here. My first time trying to come in here and claim some sobriety was March 3rd, 2003. 3-3-0-3. My first sobriety date. Then I had another sobriety date probably 10 days later. Another one 10 days after that. Then I got a one-month sobriety. Decided to go buy a beer and say, I'm stronger than you. And told myself I was going to pour it out, but drank it. And then raised my hand again. And then decided not to do that anymore. And the sponsor walked me lovingly through the 12 steps. And at one point in time, I checked into a recovery home because I didn't know what else to do. And the young man who got 20 years tonight was in that recovery home with me. And they said, look around this home, that there's a slim percentage of who will actually stick around and stay sober. And him and I are the two miracles from that. place at that time. And I'm grateful to be walking on this journey with him. And he's been a huge part of my sobriety and my life, which you'll hear about in a few minutes too. So started working the steps, had a sponsor, got into service, and got to that fourth step, and had moved in with a young lady who was in the other program. And so she was an addict, not an alcoholic. And she would go out drinking, and I'd be taking care of her kids. She'd bring people home drunk. In fact, his daughter was one of them. And a couple other people, and I'd walk downstairs, there'd be alcohol, beer, and I still had sobriety. And I'd come into meetings, have service commitments, and then I'd go home at night. And when I'm looking at that fourth, I didn't like the things that were on that fourth. And so she bought a 6-pack of Coors Light and set it in the fridge. Said, "Kid you not, don't beat yourself up," and she went to bed. I walked to that fridge, drank all those beers, nothing happened, except what happened up here. I was convinced that the cops were gonna show up, see the empty beers in the trash, violate me because I was on court probation for not, you can't drink if you're on probation. And I was on that court probation, 1-year court probation for 14 years. Because I kept going to the bars, kept drinking, kept whatever it was. I never fully finished it, you know, until I came into sobriety. So sat on that fourth, December 2nd of 2003, had those 6 drinks, and came to a meeting the next day. Told myself, I am not going to raise my hand. Came to the podium meeting that night, and they asked for newcomers, and I said, got a working honest program. So the hand went up one more time, and I cried like a baby. And people who cared more about my sobriety than my feelings at that point in time offered me a safe room in their house where they were not drinking. They rented out to sober people, and he's no longer with us. He said, "You stay here, you go to meetings, and only focus on your sobriety for the first however long. And when I tell you to, you get a job. You don't have to pay rent. You don't have to do anything else. Can you do that?" And I said, yes. I went to 1,200 meetings in my first year because I had nothing else to do. 3 meetings a day, sometimes 5 meetings a day, whatever it took. And I didn't have a car, so I walked everywhere. And I was literally the girl walking the streets, listening to Bill and Charlie, saying the Serenity Prayer out loud so it looked like I was talking to myself in my first year, trying to get some sobriety. And I don't suggest to do that, but that's my story. And then finally did all 12 steps with that sponsor, and kept going to meetings, and that man gave me my first job in sobriety. I was a union carpenter's apprentice and helped build Pioneer High School. Only woman on a job site with 200 guys. I had my own bathroom, my own hard hat, my own tool belt. And I got to walk around and take pictures and notes, and there were people that were like, "What's she doing here? She can't do that. She's got nails, you know, like 4-inch nails, and like, can she even swing a hammer?" I'm all, "You bet your life." And go over, and Matt D was actually working on that job with us and a couple others. And they're like, "Plena, come over here. Show these guys that you know how to swing a hammer." I showed them. They're like, "Damn, okay, we're not going to mess with you anymore." And then paid him back 6 months of rent. Within a couple months, because I had a union job, made good money, and I could go to meetings anytime I wanted while having that job because he was also in sobriety. And at that time, this man over here, who is now my husband, was in sobriety, and he spoke up here from the podium, and he said some things, and I thought, man, his wife is one lucky lady. I wish I was her. And like I said, he's my husband today. But I was new in sobriety, and had fallen in love with him in early sobriety. Now I was a bit crazy at the time, and had no idea how to do a healthy relationship. So, you know, my God has a different plan for me, and it took quite a while. But if we make it till tomorrow, we will have a year of continuous marriage. There's people in this room tonight that were a part of my wedding and are a part of my sobriety today. And I call genuine friends. And I'll get to that too. But back to first year. So first year, did the steps. Things were okay. Still didn't trust my God. You know, I trusted my sponsor's God at the time. But it was her God, not my God. And I did the lip service, you know, yeah, Kelly's God, yeah, you know, over here, yeah. And she was like, just wait, the miracle will happen. And I was like, you know, I did the lip service, but I didn't trust. I didn't feel it, you know. And I talked about being stubborn, so I'd be in meetings and people would talk about God. And one woman, she said, oh, I love you and God loves you. And I threatened to punch her in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And true story. And then another time, you know, if Malcolm was still around, Malcolm talked about God and he said, oh, God loves you. And I said, yeah, God can bite me. And I don't suggest telling God to bite you if you don't believe in a God, because God will bite you. No, he'll spite you. Just kidding. No, that was all me. Again, not fully, you know, turning my will and my life over to my God. Because I didn't know what that was. I didn't trust that God would take care of me. And at 3 years, I was a spoiled little three-year-old kicking my feet in my high chair because I wasn't getting the things I wanted. Everybody else was, but I wasn't. I had let my sister-in-law take my kids in my early sobriety. And I said, please hold on to them, because like I said, I was convinced I was going to kill myself. And then when I came in here, she said, when you get your life back in order, you can have your kids. And now she didn't think I had my life in order until 5 years of sobriety. And I was mad. I was like, how dare you tell me I don't have my life together? I went back to my job that I was working at, made an amends there, became a store manager in 3 years, was running a company, a million-dollar store up in AG, had the best store in the region, the best store in the zone, best store in the district, and I was the best new store manager and 10 other awards because I have that personality. I don't have my kids. All I have is sobriety. What am I going to do? I'm going to be a workaholic. So I did that, and then at 5 years of sobriety, backtrack a little bit, that sponsor that I had in my first year died my third year of sobriety, and I was told I had to get another sponsor, and I was mad about that, and so, you know, I did what most people, well, maybe not most people, but the stubborn people do. I said, no, I know what to do. So I sponsored myself, and I had a moron for a sponsor and an idiot for a sponsee, because I was sponsoring myself. And I was sponsoring women, and one of the women I sponsored also died because she went back out. And so there were two quick first sponsor and first sponsee both died in recovery. And I did not pick up that drink because people cared more about my sobriety than my feelings. And they walked me through that. And one of those was my counselor. who is my sponsor today, and she's been there for the last 19 years, 9 months, and 14, actually the last 20 plus years, because she saw me early on. And she's been with me when I didn't have my kids, when I got my kids back, when I got a year, when I got 2 years, when I got 5 years and got my kids back, when I cried, when I didn't have him in my life. Well, I had him here, but not, we weren't together. And that different things in my life. Suzanne was with me through it all. And she'd be here tonight, but she couldn't. She said, I'm going to do great. So have all, she has faith in me today. And at 10 years of my sobriety, I was going to drink. I had a plan because I was miserable in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I told you I did not have a good relationship with my God. At least I thought so. And I heard it today in a meeting that my best thinking got me to Alcoholics Anonymous. No, my best thinking didn't get me here. My God got me here. And Alcoholics Anonymous got me back into a relationship with my loving God. But it took 10 painful years of that. At 10 years, I had a plan. After I met with my 16 sponsees and my 6 service commitments and whatever it was I did on a daily basis, I was going to drink. And by the end of the night, I'd be so tired, I didn't pick up that drink. You know, and others around me relapsed. And one of them was a friend. And she called me over and told me she had relapsed after 5 years. And I saw the pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization in her eyes. And I knew I didn't ever have to feel like that again. Because I literally crawled into these rooms when I was new. So I talked to a friend in Alcoholics Anonymous, and she said, do you have a God in your life? And I was like, eh. She said, do you, I said, yeah, I have one. She goes, do you trust him? And I said, mm-mm. She goes, why not? And I said, I just don't. He's a puppet master, you know. Go over here, Felina, do this over here. And she goes, no. She said, what kind of God do you want in your life? And write that down. You pick the kind of God you want. You want a loving God? Say that. And so I did that. And now she said, and now you talk to him before you get out of bed. Because I'm the type of alcoholic that if I get out of bed and don't turn my will and my life over to God, I'm running on my will, not God's will. And I will mess up a bowl of cornflakes, you know, I will. So this friend, she said, you do the 3rd step prayer and the 7th step prayer before you get out of bed. You thank God for another day of sobriety and another day of life. You add in anything else in there that you want to thank your God for. And then you get out of bed and you ask for God's will. Can you do that? And I went, yeah, I think I can. That was 9 years ago, 9 months and 14 days, and I've done it religiously every day since. And every day these eyes pop open in the morning. First words out of my mouth are, thank you, God, for another day of life and another day of sobriety. Because that was not my plan. My plan was to get the cops off my back. Not be standing here with almost 20 years of continuous sobriety, or 7,228 days. Because, like I said, I couldn't stay sober when I wanted to when I first got here. And somebody said, do it one day at a time. I was like, well, I can do it maybe for an hour at a time during the meeting. But then when I leave the meeting, there's no telling what'll happen. You know, so that God, when I wake up, I say thank you. I ask for God's will. I ask my God to help me be a better wife, a better mother, a better member of Alcoholics Anonymous, a better friend, a better sponsor, whatever it is. And whatever his will is for me, please show me what that is. And I've never thought I'd been the brightest light bulb in the room or the smartest person in the room. And so I would ask my God at different times of my sobriety to hit me over the head and show me that I'm doing the right thing. And the first time I did that, It was to show me that Alcoholics Anonymous is the place where I'm supposed to be. And I stood up, hit my head on a bed, and I went, there's another one of those coincidences. At 2 or 3 years of sobriety, Marcus and I are putting one of those attic doors into a friend's house. Kid you not, that morning, I asked God to hit me over the head, show me I'm supposed to be doing this. We dropped the attic door on my head. while we're trying to put it in. I do not ask God to hit me over the head because I don't want to end up with a concussion. And those coincidences, there were so many of them. I was, oh, that's a coincidence. Oh, that's a coincidence. You know, when I first got sober, Finding Nemo and Bruce Almighty were the two top movies that came out. Bruce Almighty, that's about God. Finding Nemo, the sharks go to a 12-step program to stop eating fish. Coincidence? I thought so. I'm in a meeting one day, and I don't know who it was that said it, but a member of Alcoholics Anonymous nudged me and said, you know what a coincidence is, don't you? And I said, yeah, it just happens. He said, no, it's God's way of being anonymous. I melted into my seat. And for me, that's true today. And I have a wonderful life today because of my God. I believe, and it's just my belief, that we are all children of God. Right? We're all God's children. I know how I feel about my kids. And so I know how my God feels about me. And people told me many times, God knows every hair on your head, every nook and cranny in your skin, what your heart desires, and if you really, really want something, your God knows. I really, really wanted him. Kid you not. And God's timing is amazing. You know, like I said, you know, we make it to tomorrow, we will have our first year of marriage. And we've been together with each other for the last 18 years, just not in relationships. We were in other relationships, but we were connected there. You know, I knew that was the man I was going to marry. I even saw that in early sobriety, and my sponsor had me write a list of the things I wanted in recovery, and, you know, that was one of them. To get my kids back was another one. My kids are adults today, and they know the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. They know that it works, and they know they know when it gets so bad to a point where they get to, and God willing, one of mine is right there now, because she's had 2 DUIs and still drinks, but she knows Alcoholics Anonymous works, and she knows what to do in the morning. She knows, and we have a book that tells you what to do in the morning, when we retire at night, how it works. There is a solution. Like, seriously, it's in the book. No joke. And if you don't believe that, there are some words on the top of page 112 that tell you something.
What are the three words? Oh, I can read that. Read this book.
Can't you get it there? A book that tells you to read this book. It also, I'm going to read a couple things. So, the foreword to the first edition of this book, it was written in 1939. I was not born then. Anyway. So, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body to show other alcoholics precisely, not just maybe, but precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose for this book. Black and white. The main purpose for this book is to show alcoholics, how they have recovered. Precisely. I'm like, huh? Really? Black and white. Then, Lee read it. Beginning of how it works. It tells you, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. What's our path? 12 steps, 12 traditions, 12 concepts, and top of page 112, read this book. Could it get it? I mean, it should say, well, actually, never mind. Keep it simple, stupid. That's what my sponsor tells me all the time. I don't know about you, but I would rather be no place other than right here, right now. On a Sunday night? Like, really? Not in the bar, not out drinking, right here with my people who know me, who care more about my sobriety than my feelings, and sometimes I don't like that. Sometimes I don't like that. Last thing I will tell you, they told me when I got here, besides keep coming, look, there's a sign up there. It says, keep coming back. There's another one right there. No one comes to AA with a success story. If you're sitting in this room and not sure if you're an alcoholic, let me tell you something. People who are not alcoholic don't think, let me go to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting and see if I'm an alcoholic. Chances are, you're in the right place. The other thing they told me was, the good news is, you get your feelings back. The bad news is, you get your feelings back. At the beginning, that was a hard one for me to swallow. Today, not so hard. I have feelings, and I'm not numbing them, you know? I have a good life today, in spite of me. I've done everything wrong in Alcoholics Anonymous. Kid you not, I got kicked out of bars for my behavior. I've never gotten kicked out of Alcoholics Anonymous for my behavior. I get to grow up publicly in this room with you, and you get to see it all. All. I've danced on tables, I've wandered around the Alana Club in my bathing suit, I've sat with my face buried in a book telling me to go away because I need to read what I need to read because I need to be sober. Get a sponsor. Work the steps. I guarantee your life will get better. If not, your misery will be fully refunded to you out there. Thank you for letting me share.
Okay, one more time. Playing the Cortina Woody. Playing Oh my God, thank you. That was so good. Woo!